Hi, I'm Susanna Hewson from HSF's Head Office Advisory Team, and welcome to Reporting for Duties. Reporting for Duties is our limited podcast series aiming to provide bite-sized insights on corporate reporting and ESG. In this episode, we have Tim Stutt and Anna Caronio reporting for duty, and our topic for discussion is the metrics and targets pillar of the Australian Sustainability Reporting Standards. Before we get into it, though, I would first like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land from which we are broadcasting today, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and pay my respects to elders both past and present. So, Anna, what are substantial areas that clients should be aware of under the metrics and targets pillar?
So the first bucket that we've got disclosure requirements about are some cross-industry metric categories. And so the first one relates to climate-related transition risks, and that's the amount and percentage of assets or business activities that are vulnerable to climate-related transition risks. There's a similar one for climate-related physical risks. And then the third granular one is around the amount and percentage of assets or business activities that are aligned with climate-related opportunities. So it's got that risk and opportunity angle, as we're seeing quite commonly. And then there's also a capital deployment metric as well, which is about the amount of capital expenditure, financing or investment deployed towards those climate-related risks and opportunities. I think what we'll find here is that there are probably quite a few entities that have that conceptual understanding or that qualitative sort of perspective on these, but there might be a bit of work to get to the point where you're actually able to quantify the metrics that need to be disclosed. And so I think it'll be important quite early on to start figuring out what data sources do we need to draw on, what do we need to put in place to be able to actually report on these metrics.
Probably a good segue for me to flag Scope 3 emissions disclosure, which has been the subject of quite a bit of commentary in the sort of the three rounds of consultation leading up to this point, and people will have heard quite a bit about. What's proposed is that we have some flexibility in relation to the Scope 3, the different categories of Scope 3 emissions which are disclosed. So we're not necessarily wedded to the greenhouse gas protocols categories in disclosing the Scope 3 emissions and breaking it down using those only. There is a bit of flexibility around it. That will be quite helpful in that over the past few years, we have seen a number of circumstances where companies' Scope 3 emissions have not neatly fit into the greenhouse gas protocol categories. While they work most of the time, they don't work all of the time. And actually having a little bit of extra flexibility around the Scope 3 emissions disclosure will be quite helpful. Obviously, though, Scope 3 emissions is a pretty thorny area for companies in that it requires an element of estimation. Methodologies may not be in place for all types of Scope 3 emissions that companies might be exposed to or associated with. And there are dependencies on third-party data, whether that's up the value chain or down the value chain. Actually, the need to depend on the data of others is an area of some concern. And in some cases, actually, is driving a bit of a focus on ESG contracting and ensuring that companies have access to the data that they'll need to be able to report on this as well. Across those different issues, Scope 3 has got quite a bit of focus. And indeed, in some jurisdictions overseas, so for instance, the US, Scope 3 has not been included in their recent SEC climate reporting rule for the reason that it is difficult to quantify and it does have uncertainty attached to it. So therefore, from a board or a company perspective, is uncomfortable to disclose in some cases. In Australia, it's proposed that the modified liability regime reflected in the draft legislation or the bill which is before Parliament covers scope 3 emissions for that reason. So during the 3-year modified liability period, scope 3 emissions would be one of the categories of disclosure in the sustainability report, which is protected from private actions. And that's a recognition that there is this concern around the degree of estimation and the dependency on third-party data needed to inform that disclosure.
Another aspect that we see come up in this pillar, as well as the governance pillar, relates to remuneration. And I think this is picking up on a trend that we've seen for some time around climate angles, metrics, finding their way into the remuneration frameworks of companies that have focused on climate for some time. So what we'll have is a requirement to disclose whether and how climate-related considerations are factored into executive remuneration, so kind of a bit of a framework angle, but also the percentage of executive remuneration that's recognised in the current period that's linked to climate-related considerations. So I think there'll be an element of looking at the remuneration arrangements and where do we factor in climate considerations. Some companies are pretty far along that journey and have LTI metrics that are specifically linked to their climate targets, and other companies have it as part of their STI scorecard. For those that don't have anything at the moment, it might be sort of a look at whether there should be something there.
I guess to round out our discussion of the metrics and targets pillar, it's probably also worth flagging that the level of disclosure in relation to climate targets is quite granular. Sort of tracking through to, is it an absolute target, a net target, to what extent are offsets important, how is the integrity of the offsets being tested, for instance, through certification systems. For other types of targets, it might be whether or not they're externally validated. And certainly the Science-Based Targets Initiative is one of those sources of validation which comes up quite frequently with clients, although not the only one, of course. But given this degree of granularity around the targets, actually what we're expecting might occur over time is that clients have fewer things which they identify as their formal climate targets, and they'll sort of have fewer, more material climate targets rather than having kind of more modest things described as targets throughout their reporting in throwaway sentences here and there. Actually, they will have kind of more material cornerstone targets, which they are describing in detail and they are ticking off all of this extra detail on, and then describing the other things as actions that they're doing and in a slightly different way. So, you know, the focus on targets would be on their most material targets and other things would not necessarily be cast in quite the same light.
So if we think about bite-sized insights, it will be about moving from a conceptual understanding of where the business sits in relation to each disclosure requirement towards quantification, or otherwise meeting the granularity of the disclosure requirements, notwithstanding the need for estimation, I guess, and third-party reliance. So thanks for joining us. This was Tim Stutt, Anna Cronio and Susanna Hewson reporting for Duty.
You have been listening to a podcast brought to you by Herbert Smith Freehills. For more episodes, please go to our channel on iTunes, Spotify, or SoundCloud, and visit our website, herbertsmithfreehills.com, for more insights relevant to your business.